Wow. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Thank you.
Welcome, everyone. So beautiful to see the feed with all the vibrations from every corner of this
Right.
planet. So nice
Yay.
to have you with us today. And
Yeah, and it's such an honor. I mean, because how do we phrase this?
should we
This
say
is,
who we are?
oh, right. We should say, my name is Maurizio.
My name is Zaya. We are the co-founders of Science and Non-Duality, and we have the privilege. This has been a dream, actually, of ours, all these years organizing SEN, to have these two contemporary spiritual teachers, like leading contemporary spiritual teachers, together in conversation. And a lot of our audience is actually students of these two beautiful spiritual schools.
And on top of it, they're two incredibly awesome human, and it's been such a joy in all this year at SEN to interface with you and spend some time outside from the stage. So, and I heard we were not aware, but this is the first time that the two of them are meeting in a program. So it's a first blind date online between Thomas and Amit. So, but without further ado, I would say let's jump in. I want to introduce. So the title of the program is The Wonder of the Heart. So we want to once more welcome you and thanking you for joining us for this special conversation between A.H. Almas, the founder of a diamond approach to self-realization, and Thomas Huber, the founder of the Academy of Inner Science.
Welcome, Thomas, and welcome, Hamid. Maybe I will just say briefly the structure of this hour and a half we have together. We will start with opening meditation by Thomas, and then jump into a conversation that we will prompt some questions and then see how it flows. And we have left about 25 minutes to receive questions from the audience and to involve you in the conversation. And then we will close with the meditation from Hamid. So that's it.
It's all
And
yours.
Thomas,
Thank you.
we are delighted to have you with us.
Great. So thank you, Zaya and Maurizio. And I'm very honored and pleased to be here with you, Hamid. So I don't know if you can see us both now, but I'm very happy to have this conversation, even if I can't see you at the moment. And I will start with the meditation to get us all attuned and into the same space. So maybe let's close our eyes and just take a couple of breaths. And like take first a screenshot of your inner experience coming into this call. Whatever is important, whatever is happening in your life right now, and you can see the traces that leaves in you. And then let a few deeper breaths take you deeper into your current body sensations. If you slow down the way you exhale a little bit. It supports just to notice the body sensations. Gives you a chance to feel where you feel most alive or lively, most tingling, pulsing, streaming, flowing in your body. Still noticing that every time you exhale, one of your oldest friends, your breath, can guide you a bit deeper into your sitting here. And the simplicity of sitting, breathing, presencing. As you pay attention to many sensations, what is aware of you feeling yourself? I feel my body sensations. What is aware of feeling body sensations? Just right now. Before we come back to our conversation, just to pay attention that now there are many people all around the world tuning into this event. Like there's a community of practitioners with a similar intention or attention. That we're all mindful of each other as a community of practice. Even if we don't see each other visually, that we are in each other's presence. And then gently open your eyes again, and I think we can go ahead now that we are all here in the room.
Thank you, Thomas. Thank you for this beautiful introduction and grounding. Let's see, we would like to see you both on camera, so I'm just going to wait for a second. And I have a few questions just to start the conversation, but again, feel free to flow with whatever else the conversation takes us. So the wonder of the heart. So maybe we can just begin with, like, in your teachings, like, what do you mean by heart? What do you mean by awakening of the heart? And what does it mean to cross the gap between the mind and the heart? Is it a natural process, a natural part of the growth on the spiritual path? Is it something spontaneously happening by grace? I know these are a lot of questions, so I'm just going to stop here and maybe we just begin with, like, yeah, what is the heart on the spiritual path? And again, this question has been tackled by every spiritual tradition and has been approached differently. So me to Thomas, whoever feels beginning first.
Maybe Hamid, you want to start?
I want to say first that you and Tom, we met together before. We had a meal together in Sands. So it's not the first time we meet, actually, personally. We never did a seminar together, but we met personally, which is nice. I enjoyed that breakfast and our conversation. And there was a lot of heart in it.
That's right.
So I like the way some of the Sufi look at the heart. They talk about the soul, and the soul has stages of development. The first stage is the animal soul. And that is the soul that is dominated by its instincts, instinctual drive for survival and things like that. The second stage of the heart is the human soul. The third stage is the angelic soul. The human soul, this is what differentiates the human soul from the animal soul, is that the human soul has heart, has developed heart. So I think by heart, they mean love. That's one thing. But heart, you know, for me, is the feeling affective dimension of our consciousness. Like our consciousness, our being, our presence, our awareness is a sensitivity to be aware, to have experience. But that experience is not just knowing. There is a feeling component to it. When you feel spacious, you don't see space, you also feel spacious. The feeling of spaciousness is the contribution of heart to consciousness. But usually for most tradition, when they talk about heart, they mean more, not just the feeling, the specific feeling, a positive feeling of our true nature, which is feels good. It feels good, it feels pleasurable, it feels blissful. And that is really what makes love be an important thing, because love is that bliss flowing to others. It's like the happiness inside us expresses itself as wanting others to be happy. And that way there's an appreciation and liking, many kinds of ways that heart expresses itself. But the heart for me, in my work, and you know, my experience, is quite a big realm of our spiritual universe. You know, it provides its effective dimension, but bring in things and expressions and form of experience that are not available just to pure awareness, which is bringing the capacity for contact, for connection, for appreciation, for liking, for generosity, for goodness. And it is fundamentally the goodness of our true nature manifesting itself in a way that not just illuminates, but the illumination has a sense of feeling good, feeling fulfilled, feeling So contentment, fulfillment, love, compassion, all that is heart. And that is really, so it's a big dimension of spiritual, the spirit or spiritual world or consciousness. And we could talk about it in many ways, you know, but that's how I see it in general in the present time. It might be good. And Thomas, I'm sure, has. He seemed to be full of heart, so I'm sure he knows.
Yeah, thank you, Amit. Like, I'm trying to not again repeat, because many things you said I very much resonate with. Maybe I would frame it a bit differently, but in essence, it's very resonant. But I think the heart is, in a way, like a meeting point of, you know, our entire evolution as life up to this moment, and the inspiration that we get from what I call, I think what you refer to as angelic soul, like the capacity of light or potentiality, and at the same time, the relation on the horizontal level to the world 2022, and how all this vertical and horizontal development meets, and how we embrace these dimensions in our life. And maybe just to add, and not to repeat the same thing again, I think one thing that I'm very passionate about, because I think it's in our time an important component, is that whenever we as human beings or our ancestors or our cultures ran into severely or truly overwhelming experiences, that we call it today trauma, but it's kind of a postponing of experience, and it creates like a split. And I think it's very interesting in our spiritual practice, I think we often meet that kind of split, that the part of me is living identified with the past, and we're kind of practicing onboarding that past into the present moment, so that we can truly be present and open with whatever is happening here right now. And I think that this, the split between, and you said it also in other words, the split between the mind and the heart or the body, is something that is part of our spiritual practice as our healing work to do. And the more we do this, the fuller become compassion and love and the availability to the current moment, and also like a spontaneous knowing that comes out of a state of not knowing, and relating to the current flow of experiences. And I think another dimension that I find interesting, and I'm also curious how you look at it, is that in our work, I often say healing is the restoration of the original movement, or is restoring movement. And often trauma and shadow and inner splits kind of are reduced movement. And so like our healing work restores that movement, so that more of life can flow through us, and that we experience the being part of the movement of life and not feeling separate from the movement of life. And I think when people say that they feel open-hearted, that there is a sense of we are in tune, we are resonant, and we are joining each other's movement, versus feeling that we are kind of a bit separate in a kind of a reduced form of movement. So that's I think something to add. But I'm curious, Amit, how you relate to the movement, like the Tao describes Wu Wei, like the everything is kind of an eternal movement. So that's, I'm curious how you look at it.
Yeah, well, I like the way of talking about heart and body and mind. And the heart is really what connects the mind and body. And it's classically said, the heart is what connects heaven and earth. You know, mm-hmm. It's heaven and earth come together in heart. And in some sense, in spiritual work and practices, the main obstacles that we deal with, that everybody deal with, have to do with the heart. The heart gets blocked. Its heart gets obstructed. It gets distorted. So because it is feeling, heart means your capacity to feel and to feel. And we feel, if we feel completely freely, we can't help but feel love and empathy and all of that. So if we don't feel that way, if we feel sort of intellectual, if we feel disconnected, if we feel angry or frustrated, all of that, I mean, there are things there in the way. The heart is not free. And as a result, when you already mentioned trauma and splitting and all of that, they do affect, of course, the body and the mind. But the work itself, a lot of it has to do with heart. I mean, how you feel. True, we have to deal with our beliefs and delusions and all of that, and tensions in our body and open up. But from what I see, the major work is how we liberate our heart. And that is something that I like what we're doing here, because most people, when they think about awakening, they think liberating the mind. You just know who you are, you know, and which is true. That's important. But there are many people who teach without heart. They know consciousness and they know where they could be expanded, transcended, but they're not heart for them. They don't know where the other person's at. They don't care where the other person's at. You know, to know where the other person's at, to have a feel and to respond appropriately to it is heart. And that is really the flow of heaven on earth in some sense. That is how. So human beings are in that way is an important link, you know, for a whole cosmic movement. And you could say, that's one way I think about it sometimes, is that when you think about Darwin theory of evolution, about survival and, you know, and that the point of the evolution is to make sure that your seeds are survive, you know, next to you. I said, well, there's something about that not satisfying, not complete about the evolution, because I see a human being, it's true, that happened for survival, they need to do that, but that's it, just survive. That's what evolution is about, is just, it doesn't make sense, because some people do evolve to be conscious human being, and not only conscious, but to feel the goodness and the wonder of reality and all of that. That must be part of evolution, you know, because evolution is life force itself evolving through various ways, various vehicles. So life force has in it heart and appears in some animals. Human being, we can know it more directly and feel it. And so, yes, I mean, heart is in that sense, is a big way of, major way how the cosmic or the Tao flows. It doesn't flow in just awareness and movement, but also in heart that connects the two, that gives the two meaning. I mean, when you say, what is the meaning of life? It's not a known thing, it's a felt thing. The heart knows. And one thing, you know, I understood in my journey is that the heart is not only love, but also truth. The heart is what knows the truth. It's not the mind. The heart has a sense, inherent sense of truth that tells the mind, oh, you're onto something. The mind doesn't know. The mind is conditioned by what it hears and learns, all that, which is all useful, whatever. But what gives it the direction? Yeah, I'm on the right track. It's really the heart. And the more we have that truth sense of the heart, the more even our scientific research will be more guided.
Yeah, that's a beautiful way of saying it. It's like that the heart gives us like a compass. Like in one of the prayers that once came to me is like that the in the silence of my heart I am, and in the stillness of my heart I hear thy name. Like I hear the name of God, yeah. Or I hear the whisper of God. And it's beautiful how you said it, that when we are able to calm our interior down, so we have a capacity to listen. And that's exactly what you said, that in the heart we feel the truth, whatever the truth, but we feel a compass, a guidance. So that's really beautiful. And the other one thing that you said that I also love is like how we create a connection that our thinking is not like a helicopter mind on top of reality or on top of nature, but it's deeply synchronized, that sensing and cognition is one process.
Yeah.
That it's one emergence, not two different things. And I think in the, like we talked about this a little bit, but maybe we can get into this again when we had this breakfast. That I'm very curious, like how we, for example, live in a, we all have been born into this kind of collective field, and this collective field carries trauma, and that's split already for like thousands or hundreds of thousands of years. We know that process, and karma has been created. And I'm curious, because we are so conditioned by the thinking, that there is a gap between thinking and sensing often. And it's also, I can read maybe many books about spiritual journeys, awakening, but to live it is something else. So maybe we can speak a little bit about this, that we've seen it in our parents, we have seen it in our teachers, you know, at school, we at university, like that gap between being able to think about something and to combine it and embody it and live it. Like that's thinking and sensing becomes one process, or energy and the word is again not two. And I'm curious, like how you relate to that, that you know, we are surrounded by that separation often. It's kind of a pandemic, like our COVID pandemic is also that pandemic. And so I'm curious how you relate to that split, and how in your work, like what's the practice to heal that gap, or to unify the gap, as you said. Because in one way, we could say one way to describe wisdom is how much world is being included in the way I live, or in the way I act, or in the way I walk in life. How much of life is included in that? And so I'm curious what any thoughts that you have about closing the gap between the word and the energy, or the mind and the body.
Yeah, it's a big subject, of course. And most teachings are about that, you know. But mentioning that as a pandemic, it's true. It's a pandemic in the human race for a long time. That's in the mind and the body, the embodiment are separated and not connected. Most people live in their minds, even if they have emotions. You know, even their emotions are controlled by their thoughts. And that's why the Sufis say the human being, the soul, has become a human when it has heart. That means most human beings, they're not human yet, according to the Sufis. They don't have a heart yet, the way they mean by heart. You know, because, and so a human being living to survive, that's the animal level. To survive and procreate and have fun, all of that, that's still animal level. Heart adds another dimension to reality. And that dimension does bring the mind and the body together, bring the thoughts with the instincts together. The instinctual drive, the instincts are powerful forces. and people, you know, desire for survival is a powerful thing. I mean, they can't resist it. It's necessary. But it becomes what I call is more refined, more civilized when it starts integrating heart. And so that the instinct for social instinct to have companionship and community, it becomes the drive for intimacy. And intimacy is a deeply felt thing, you know. Because intimacy, we're intimate with our consciousness and can be intimate with others. And intimacy is a deep way that the heart can mature and ripen. And but it is the same social instincts, right? And usually social instinct is guided by mind, by the thought that we learn from society and our upbringing and all that, what's the right thing, what's, you know. And we end up, you know, you can have friendship, you can have a relationship, even a love relationship, but the intimacy is somewhat like, it's not immediate. You know, the most we could do intimacy is to be physically intimate. You know, for me to be physically intimate is the same thing as my heart becoming the heart of the other. We have one heart and we feel things together. So if our intimacy is feeling sadness, we feel it together. If the intimacy is feeling delight, we have the same delight. So we're not only aware of each other's delight, intimacy can unify the hearts, and which expresses the unity of the universe. The whole universe is one, is unified. And the heart can be felt in a heart way in the world with other human beings. Because you talked, Thomas, about the way of bringing life into our realization, like how much we engage with life, and that's wisdom. And that's too, I sort of see wisdom that way. That wisdom is really the expression of our realization, of our spiritual ripening into life. Mm-hmm. If you just have the experience of it, that's not wisdom, that's realization. Wisdom is realization, action. And bringing the values, the qualities of realization, like awareness and solidity and stillness and generosity and goodness into our action and an interaction. And I mean, for me, that becomes real life then. I mean, life without that, I mean, you know, sort of dry. And could go awry in the sense that people who don't have heart are the people who hurt others. That's one thing we need to see. You know, when we talk about abuse, when we talk about trauma and all of that, and all the difficulties that people have, and people are having difficulties now. And there are a lot of polarization and enmity and all of that, and wanting the other to feel bad, and you know, demonizing the other. If somebody who has heart wouldn't do that, or somebody who has heart will listen, will be open, will understand, will empathize, will feel that either the person is happy and I'm happy for them, or they're having a hard time and I feel compassion about it. They might be angry, whatever, but they're suffering inside. So the heart can penetrate and see what's really the truth of what's happening to the outer expression. And that is part of wisdom, really. So you brought in a really good point, Thomas, about talk about wisdom, which is the living from what we are when what we are is our authenticity.
That's very beautiful. Very beautiful. Like also the, like one point that you spoke to that I think is so important right now, also in this time, how is our experience of intimacy within the cultural context when there are so many polarized groups and there are so many views, even just on the pandemic, the fragmentation that shows up in our cultures all around the world. And what a practice is really beautiful is that somebody who has heart, in your words, would listen, would empathize, would find a common resonance ground and be with. And I think that's a very powerful practice. It's like it's also a call for a practice how we deal with the cultural fragmentation that we see at the moment. Also, when you sometimes hear the political conversations and the violence in the political conversations, that's far at the distance. And what you spoke to is how we make our practice kind of a practice of intimacy and listening and onboarding the distance into intimacy. And I think that's a very powerful practice. And another thing that I heard is that there is realization, but there is also the manifestation of our realization and being able to live it. And that's what I loved about your work already, you know, for many, many years, because I always felt that there are two kinds of spiritual paths. One is like the fast food, what I call fast food spirituality. Like that's like, give me a weekend workshop to get enlightened, or give me a weekend workshop that fixes my issues. Or it's an invitation into a real path. And that path is much more committed. It has a much longer breath. And it has also a lot of power because of that. It doesn't stay on the surface. It brings like a lot of depth. And ever since I heard the first time about your work and I felt your work, I felt, yes, this is like what I would call like a path. It's deep. It needs commitment. It needs a longer breath. And it needs to, what you said, like embody the authenticity of who we are as our walking. And that's beautiful. So maybe we can talk a little bit about, you know, the capitalistic danger of staying on the surface or and trying to experience many things in order to get a lot of fast shots of excitement or to have the power to deepen a path. And I think that's also part of healing the gap between the mind and the body is consistency and is commitment to a journey and to like a deep inquiry.
And Thomas, you bring in something very important, which I have been contemplating for lately, a few years, because that's a new sort of development in spirituality in many spiritual circles, especially among young people, which is they want instant enlightenment because everything is faster. Your phone is always getting faster and faster, and you want only get the faster phone. So you think of the same thing with your teacher, you crank it up fast. And it is a tendency that I notice that, and I think many will learn it at some point, but hopefully they could learn it soon enough, which is that spirituality is not an experience you have. It is a development and maturation of our soul, of our consciousness, of our being, to become more real, more authentic, and mature in the sense that it recognizes the truth, the value of truth, and the value of heart, and the value of intelligence, all of that. And it is cannot be done with one experience, cannot be done with one workshop. And it's appreciating what life is like, that life is an evolution. It's a learning, and it's a development, in some sense, it's a process of, at some point when we are into it, it's a process of ripening. We become a ripened human being. Ripened human being is moving from being at the beginning, like roots and a tree and a trunk that's hard and leaves and all that, to having fruits that are then very green, then they become beautiful and ripe, and so ripe they could almost drop and very juicy. And that is more the real process of how a human being is becoming a really human being. And that takes time. It takes commitment, dedication, focus, and following a particular teaching, a particular practice. You can't just sample things. The spirituality is not a smorgasbord, you know, which many people want to try this, try that. Yeah, that's what everybody does. At the beginning, you need to sample things. At some point, you need to settle on something. Otherwise, you'd be wasting your time, you see. Mm-hmm. Because you'd be wasting your time, and before you know it, you're about to die. You haven't gotten deep, you know. And to get deep, you really need the dedication, the focused dedication. And a particular practice, particular teaching, whatever it is, and find a teacher that you trust, you love, and a teaching that resonates, and to really follow it to its depth, because the teaching, any real teaching, has a great deal of knowledge and understanding and experience and wisdom, and it's not just one experience, you know. Although many of the texts are written, you could arrive at the ultimate, the absolute, and that's it. But if you read the biographies of those people, you see they've gone through all kinds of things. And they continue to go through all kinds of things, you know. So for me, enlightenment is not the end, it's the beginning of life. You know, and things can evolve from there, you know. And so that's one thing that many people really need to learn. And I don't know how people are going to learn it. They're not going to get it from what I'm saying. You know, words don't do it. They have to be clobbered over and over again and get disappointed over and over again until finally, hopefully, they'll wake up. Well, I better focus on here. You know, and I hope our thing, like what we're doing now, can help some people, you know, recognize that it's different from what I see happening most of the time. But the time-honored way, tried and true for millennia, is the commitment to a path or a teacher. And can take decades to bear real fruits. Because people hear stories that this person got awakened, then something hit their head and they got awakened. That is, I mean, that too happens, but that's rare. But even in the Zen context, for instance, when somebody hears something and they get awakened, they've been meditating maybe for 2-3 decades. You know, it didn't happen in out of context, you know. So although if you want to risk it and say it will happen to me just by going to a workshop, well, you could do that. But really, the way that we have known really works is a commitment to a practice, to a path. And that requires both belly, mind, and heart, all of them together, I think, in harmony. Mm. You need to work together. And, you know, Thomas, you work with groups and trauma, and you obviously you sort of develop this interesting way, because trauma is very widespread in the culture, and the culture now is traumatized further. It looks like we have a traumatized planet. So your work will be very appropriate. Maybe you should do a global trauma teaching, because you know many people are either frustrated or afraid or got sick or hate somebody, or they hated by somebody, or I mean this amazing thing, and that is really disintegrating for the human spirit, and I hope we come through it in at least some kind of good way.
Yeah, that's right. It's very prevalent or pandemic, one could say. And yeah, but I love what you said is like also, you know, and I mean, I have so much yes to many things you said right now, so maybe I will not repeat it. I will just add something that came up is also the feeling of like committing to a path is also committing to care, that we care for one another. And yeah, we're not just jumping here and there and they're staying anonymous. So I think that there is a community that also cares, and there is a teaching or a teacher, or like there is a whole environment of care.
Yeah.
Because I think in the moments when it's really hard, where we by ourselves might turn away from the practice or turn away from the divine, that there is an environment that helps us through the care and the love. Now we are back to the heart. Like I think that care is important in certain situations where it feels, where it might feel dark on the journey for someone. There's, you know, there's support and there's an environment of love and care. And I think that's also an element of the path, and that we commit and we also give something. Because it's also like a community of practice, like I'm sure that's in your community the same, is that we all also give something. It's not just what do I get, it's also what do I give. And that that me giving something into the community and me receiving something is part of the learning and the maturation that you spoke about when we mature into our heart quality.
Yeah.
So and I think...
Yeah, you talk about the importance of a spiritual community, not just solo practice, which I agree with you, because that's what I do. And when a group of like-hearted, like-minded people who are practicing together the same way, and they know each other in time, there develops some kind of a field between them that is feed that feeds them, and they feed it and they develop it by their own practice. Each one feeds the field by interacting with each other and caring for each other. That's true. And that being open and having a community like that, it makes it easier to be open and trusting, because you know most people are scared to open because they don't trust most of the world, and most of the world sometimes is not trustworthy. So if you are a community, you know that everybody cares to know the truth, care to be real. There is then the mutual respect and the trust, and that kind of connectivity can allow the heart to appear a certain way, can allow a certain manifestation of the heart that feels like being held by a caring hand, like being held by a softness and a delicacy, a nourishing softness that permeates the whole field, that everybody feels bathed in and connected through. And that is actually, I've seen it as a palpable thing that happened, even on Zoom. Amazingly, it can happen. You know, if a group really know each other, they're all there, they're all really, really present, they're not busy with their cell phone, all that. It really can happen that there is a palpable field of presence. But it is usually the palpable field of presence that develops is a loving presence, you know, which is really always beautiful to see. But it's also very useful, you know, like people feel they have a place where they go, where they feel safe, they feel it can be as open as possible, all their difficulties, they don't have to hide anything. And there's some more courage as a result, and more openness that can develop for the whole field. The whole field can develop too, not just individuals. So a group can develop and become more mature. And so the one thing, you know, to bring back to the question of commitment is that really it requires maturity. The consciousness, the heart can mature. Mature means it sees what's the true value in life, what is precious, and mm-hmm. to give it a priority and to appreciate by giving it time and giving it attention. And
yeah, I love how you...
Yeah, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Finish. Sorry.
You do. I'm finished.
Yeah. Like, I love what you said about the field. This is very yeah. powerful. And I also experienced this very powerful in the groups. Yeah. And I think it's a very lovely cure to the current hyper-individualism. That, like, when we already live an embodied way, in which we all do, because we're all in culture, we are not sitting somewhere in the Himalayan caves. And so that I think the interdependence between the collective and the individual, that an individual is not separate but an expression of the collective, that there is a constant interdependence. And I think the experience of strong, mature we spaces, like spaces that develop that kind of what I call coherent field or coherence, mm-hmm. that coherence brings forth, the higher it goes, the more capacities emerge. So higher capacities emerge, the higher is the coherence of a group, and the more it supports again healing. So it becomes a very beautiful fuel for the individual work within the we, and every individual work charges the we yes. space and supports mm-hmm. the we space. So it's generous. Uh-huh. And it's beautiful because it always, you know, sharing something in a we space is generous and listening is generous. So when we are both, when all of us are generous, something else can emerge between us. And I think that generosity is beautiful. I always feel that it's very touching to see sometimes very deep, authentic processes in front of many hundreds or whatever people. And then the coherence that it creates and the mutual learning it creates. So that's...
Yeah, and many people, most people in the group usually will actually feel it. Mm-hmm. They feel they are within some kind of coherent field. Mm-hmm. But the interesting thing is not just feel, it's a field of love. Mm-hmm. It feels like you're being caressed, you're being mm-hmm. touched lovingly, you know, as a precious being. And it is a certain manifestation of consciousness that actually appears in those situations. Like this kind of situation, where a group committed together and care for each other, allows the situation, opens up to certain manifestation of consciousness, which is a kind of love whose nature, his function, is to hold situation and to make everybody feel trusting that everything is okay here, that mm-hmm. everything will be okay. And that is very useful for inner work, you know, especially for people working with, you know, individually, of course, but for a group.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think it's also, at least in my experience, that what you said before, that trauma is on the whole planet is kind of a global phenomenon that is painful all over. Doesn't matter where you go, from the Middle East to the US to Europe to Asia and everywhere else. And that kind of field experience is something, if it's being multiplied or if it becomes also like a fuel for a much more global work connected to, in a healthy way, connected to technology, like we two are talking now. We could never have this conversation today without Zoom, but somehow yeah. like we are connected and I can feel you and you can feel me, and we are kind of in a resonant space, and many people are with us in a resonant space. I think that's a real opportunity if we don't use technology out of addictions, but if we use it like in that way, it creates like a global field that has a lot of power. And I'm fascinated by the possibility of this kind of collective healing. So there's individual healing within the collective healing. And yeah. that interplay, I think, is a very important emergence of our time.
Yeah, good point. And I think it is a microcosm of what can happen globally. A whole human race can be like this, but we're not there yet. So it happens in groups that are focused on a certain practice, certain work, like as you do in your group. It makes me wonder, when will it be possible for you to do a group for the leaders of the world, you know, all the dictators and all that, to do some trauma therapy for them? I think they're all traumatized from the way they're behaving. When their heart is not open, there must be some kind of trouble or trauma someplace, you know.
That's right. I think if enough people take their inner healing work and trauma work deeper, and like what we also spoke about, that there is a real interest in depth and maturation. And yeah. I think it will come more and more that also the leaders of our world will do that. I think it's a matter like of doing the work that we spoke about. It will naturally, the more we integrate polarization, it opens up new possibilities, and then a new polarization comes, and then we integrate that, and then mm-hmm. and I think like this more and more, like we see that, you know, that what you described before with the field is not just happening for the people in your groups, for example, but it has, and your groups have an effect in the whole yeah. in the whole societal body, even if at the beginning it looks like small. But I think there's a lot happening on kind of transformation and unification, and then doors open up in the, so I think your the vision of many leaders coming together, I think it's not that far out.
Well, I hope you're right. It looks like we're going the wrong direction.
Right.
I hope things will turn around and they'll find out that the way we're going is just only trouble.
Yeah, at the moment it really looks like that. That's right. Yeah. And go ahead.
Yeah, I hope they wake up at some point. Not good for them or their nations, you know, the way they're doing it.
Mm.
I mean, also not just in, you know, between countries, within the same nation, the polarization happening in the group, mm-hmm. you know. And I see that what's needed is really more heart than anything else. Because mm-hmm. heart makes us more willing to listen without having to give up ourselves. We can be truly ourselves and, mm-hmm. and open to the other to hear and feel where they are. And that, I don't see how they can be healing without that kind of open communication at some mm-hmm. point.
Mm-hmm.
So I appreciate that you do your work in a group that way, because sort of that's a model of what can happen, I think.
Right. Yeah, I see that the same way. It's like a model that can multiply, and then it can reach yes. through the collective, especially through technology. I think that's why I like technology. I see all the shadow sides of it, but for this,
yeah.
it's a very good medium, and we need to learn how to use it in order to be able to create these emergent fields also online. But as you said, you have the same experience we have, that, and I know others do. Like the intimacy that we can create. And it's so interesting because it says basically what like mystics over thousands of years have said, that the information is non-local, that we are, even if we sit thousands of miles apart right now, we are dialed into the same space, and we yeah. can feel each other deeply. That's amazing.
It's amazing. I mean, I actually feel like I'm sitting here talking in my office here, my study, in my house. But I know you're in Europe, and Maurizio and Zaya someplace in Northern California. But I feel you all here. You know, I feel you're here, not just in my room. You're sort of in my heart, and that is one of the functions of the heart: bring us close in some kind of, even though we're through internet and all kind of, you know, technology going, but interesting that the technology can be used in such a real way for true connection that we're experiencing right now, and I mean, it's a felt way, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. I'll check in with Maurizio, since you brought him in, if it's time already to switch to the Q&A.
Yeah. Yes, we're getting so many questions.
Beautiful question. It's wonderful question. Covering all the spectrum.
So we can bring a couple of questions. So to summarize, like, if you could speak more about what is the relationship between trauma healing, loosening the body armor, the protecting of the heart that happens when we are from the wounding, and opening the heart, transcending the identification with pain. And is pain a doorway to heart opening? And when is a doorway, and when it leads to more fragmentation? I know this is many questions, but whatever feels relevant for you at the moment to address.
Yeah, go ahead, Thomas. You are a good Thomas directly.
Yeah, okay, so I'll start and then hand it over to you. So let's say that I think the first thing to notice is when we're dealing with trauma, like with the effects of trauma, not with the trauma impact, like something bad that happened to us, like a violence or like a childhood trauma that really hurt us. So I'm talking about the trauma response or the after effect of trauma that we live with and that causes symptoms in our life. So that's what I'm speaking to. That we see that within ourselves, there is a tremendous intelligence. And that intelligence expresses itself through all the gifts and all the beauty and flourishing and the power of the heart and the power of our innovation capacity. But it also expresses itself in the way how in traumatizing moments we are able to fragment a part off and compartmentalize that part, split it off and close it down and take out our sensitivity from the tremendous pain that this causes because it's simply too much. That process is deeply intelligent. That's why in one of the prayers we say I'm grateful for what I see and I'm grateful for what stays hidden because this is thy will and that's why I'm here. So I'm grateful for what I see. Most of the people would say yes, I'm grateful for life that I'm conscious about, but that the life that is hidden has an intelligence in the hiding, so there's a reason why it's hidden. And once I can bow down to that intelligence, and that's not stupidity or shortcoming or dysfunction. That's a function that I need to learn to listen to. Like Hamid said before, like the more I develop the power of the heart or the maturation, I also develop the power to listen to life deeply and listen to life beyond the surface. So on the surface, it looks like I have issues deeper down. There's intelligence at work. And the higher is my capacity to relate to that as intelligence, it will help me to turn on the functions that I needed to turn off because it was simply too much. And also respect that if something is too much, it doesn't mean that it's stupid. It means it's intelligent to protect myself. And that is also, I think, one way. Because sometimes we say, oh, I want to get rid of this, or I wished I had less fears, or it's like we are cutting off what has been cut off already. And the work is more about onboarding and including and bringing back into life what needed to be pushed away. And that's a beautiful example. Like trauma healing, I think, is a beautiful example of what you said, Hamid, before about the power of the heart, the depth of listening, the way we create intimacy, the way we listen and unify again, all of that are capacities to melt the ice that is living in our bodies, that splits our minds from our emotions and bodies, or also our minds from nature. And so how we create this unification. So that's a beginning because the question was very, very big, so maybe I'll stop here.
You're right. Many questions in that question. Well, I want to address one part of it, which is about pain and healing. And one thing I've learned is that the kindness, the compassion of the heart cannot develop without us feeling our pain, experiencing our pain. And that, in fact, the very specific, precise key for true kindness, true empathic kindness to open up in us is for us to feel our own emotional pain, emotional hurt. If we feel the hurt, the inner wounding, for whatever reason, and able to stay with it by support of other person or community or by ourselves, and feel the hurt without fighting it, it is from within this hurt that arises a healing kind of compassion. It will heal the hurt, but it makes us be able to experience hurt and not fight it, and make us able to feel empathic, feel other people hurt, other people pain. So pain is a doorway, actually, to the compassionate heart. And the more pain we see, experience, the more, I mean, all of our pain and pain of others, the more compassion. I remember when the Dalai Lama, to increase his compassion, he went to Nagasaki and places where the atomic bomb, but he wanted to feel the pain there. And because that's true, it developed compassion, because he wanted to increase his compassion, although he wasn't lacking of it, you know.
Yeah. Just filming our movie, The Wisdom of Trauma, I found so much compassion, actually, in the communities that the homelessness, the people struggling with addictions, those that are really in the grip of pain, but I also turning towards the pain, they're not denying it. Yeah, a lot of questions are coming about how to bridge the gap between the mind and the heart. If you have any practices, when we lose the path of the heart, how do we come back? And one more, I'm gonna add the relationship between personal heart and universal heart. So yeah, including many of them, just we are receiving so many beautiful questions.
Maybe I give it a go. And I think one practice that I believe is very powerful is that I see that I, in my own practice, first develop like a deeper stability through embodiment, through kind of mindfulness practices and kind of a spaciousness, but also a witnessing how often I talk about life or from life. And I think the more we pay attention to that, how often my mind is talking about life or about myself or interpreting life. And then when I really look inside, I might find that I don't feel what I'm talking about. And in that gap, we often talk behind the backs of other people. We talk about things that are not anymore connected to the experience that we are going through. And having a practice for myself, but also within a community, that we practice deeper attunement and like speaking out of energy, not about energy. And I think also in I can do this for myself in my own inner inquiry. And even if at the beginning I find out, because that's something that many people find a bit hard, is that more often than we think, we are actually absent or numb inside. Because that was a way to deal with overwhelming emotions, or like Hamid, as you said before, the inner wounding. So when I feel myself, I might not feel anything emotionally, or I feel tension in my body, and emotionally I feel a bit blank. And that I develop a way of relating to that inner not feeling as a kind of sensing or feeling. And not disregard that place that I go to look to feel something. Because then I am not respecting my own numbing process. So in the inner inquiry work, I see often how people stumble over the, if I don't feel myself, I go to look at what is underneath, or I look what should I feel, instead of, when I feel the split between mind and body, that's already what I feel. So not feeling is a kind of feeling. And if I can become one with not feeling, usually it gives way to the deeper sensations that lay underneath. But that's, I think, one practice. And the other one is seeing if I can speak out of sensing. Even if I write an email, did I feel the person before I write an email? If I write a WhatsApp text, I feel the person and then I write. That's much more connected. And then we see that technology helps us to bridge like a much deeper sensing capacity that we all have, that many of us also haven't been trained to use. But the whole mystical practices are full of deep sensing capacities that we are all like connected, like there's the World Wide Web, there is also like an intranet, like an internal World Wide Web, there's the consciousness function to it. And that we train that function and we train that muscle that we can feel and sense much more than maybe we are conditioned to experience or that we believe today. So that's a short part of the answer.
Yeah, I mean, one way I usually say this, main practice I actually teach is to be where we are instead of where we're supposed to be, or which we don't want. Is where we are is where we are. We need to respect that, be open to it, learn to be with it with full feeling, full, and that way we get to know it and understand it as fully as possible. And as you mentioned, there is a natural intelligence. Things open up if we stay where we are. And if we really fully understand to fight it, it will open to bloom, to reveal its secret. And other question I think was, as I mentioned, was the question of difference between universal heart and a personal heart. That's an important question because many non-dual teachers don't address that point. Could only talk about universal heart. And the most important, I think, universal heart is, for me, is when I feel I am the ocean of love. That heart or love is not just in the heart, it's everywhere. And it pervades the whole universe. And that love is, feels good, it's wonderful, it's luminous, it loves all the same way. If a universal heart, you know, a person who has universal or non-dual realization of heart, they will say, I love you, but I love everybody. But that doesn't make the person feel loved, because it's not personal love. You love everybody because you love everything. You love the person the way you love the tree, the way you love the rock, the way, and it's all love, because that is universal. And it is, has its place, and without it, there is no love. It is the source of all love. But that love can be channeled into the individual, the human being, and appears as a personal love in the sense that the love is a love of a person, a love of a flower, love of the sunset. And so the love is then becomes appropriate. Like you love somebody, you love them depending on where they are. You know, the love can appear as appreciating or liking who they are or the way they are, or could be appearing as a kind of generosity, wanting to do something or say something that make them feel happy, feel good, or it could be kindness because they are So that's more personal, and the person is more attuned, and it is the basis of relationship. Universal heart is not the basis of relationship. It's the basis of unity. Everything is one, and the individual are not as important. In personal heart, the individual is what matters. And the fact is, as a human being, if we are interested in spiritual experience and realization, we need to realize we have the capacity for both. The heart is both universal and personal. And you cannot choose one without the other, although some people experience one without the other. It's easier to experience personal heart for most people. You don't have to be awakened to experience personal heart. The universal heart requires more expansion, transcendence. But then by itself, it is not responsive to the individuals. Like you love everybody. Yes, I love everybody, but that's not the same thing as I love you. You know, when you say that, the other person feel it and respond. If you say, I love everybody, you say, yeah, well, I'm just as good as my desk. You know, and people don't respond to universal love as to personal love. And I think that's important for us to know that human beings have potential. But we, in fact, two are inseparable and we need both. In our life, we need to have the universal love, so to know that there is goodness in the universe as a whole, you know, underlying everything, the nature of everybody, but that can express itself as a goodness toward particular others, which becomes the basis of true relating a relationship.
That's beautiful. I mean, it's like in the Bible, there is like this the mass awakening of the Israelites on Mount Sinai, and then the voice of God speaks to the Israelites, and afterwards everybody said that the voice of God spoke to me, to my life.
Yeah.
It didn't say like a collective truth.
Yeah.
Like the most universal was the most specific.
Yeah,
and that's beautiful what you said. Now that's also in that place in the Bible, like that the most universal expresses itself in the most specific, and that's the spectrum of love. That's very beautiful. So thank you.
Yeah, I like you bringing the Bible of madness, because there are many good stories about that.
Yeah. Yeah. I also, you know, love when, let's say, walking in nature, sometimes I just feel like that download straight into my heart, the universal love that comes, you know, beyond anything, that we can recharge this separate heart. Anyway, this is a good question. I studied with both Thomas and Almas in both approaches. And so, what drew me to Thomas' work as an already dedicated student in the Ridwan school is the explicit manifestation of how the spiritual ripening process can thus heal our relationship with the world. I would love to hear more about this interplay or any other of you would like to speak concerning the being in our world, as much as trauma and harm being enacted. So how to bridge the inner work with the work in the world. Again, this question came in different forms, and the two different approaches to that.
Yeah, I think, you know, I remember, Dilgu Khyentse Rinpoche. I don't know if anybody, if people remember him. He died about 20 years ago. He was one of the greatest lamas in Tibetan Buddhism. He spent 10 years or so in a cave meditating. But then when he did it to develop and learn and open up. But then in the world, when he's with people, he's always hugging people. When you look at his demeanor, he's just bursting with love and really appreciating people individually. And that is that for me, true, more complete realization. And so the question about you know, one's experience, realization, how to bring it in the world, I think that the question, it's two stages in some sense that can be happening parallel or sequentially. First, we have to know what we are, and in a fundamental way. That's a fundamental meaning, independent of what we learned in the past, independent from what we hear from where it has to come from within, the truth of what we are. As we know that, then the next stage is how to live it. That is not the full realization. It's called realization of awakening, but it's not the full one. The full one is when it can flow into the world. And from that place, I can live my life, interact, even the way I eat my meal. It's the fullness of consciousness, both in me and it's in the meal itself. You see, but when I'm talking with somebody I'm having dinner with, you know, I know who they are and know what they are and know what they like, and I might give them a piece of what I have that I like. So, well, why don't you try that? I mean, there's an interaction that has in it that expresses the inner illumination, you know, because also part of the inner realization is recognizing that inner light, that inner love, that inner consciousness is the nature of everybody. Everybody got that, and you can't help but love it and love other people because they have it. And then that brings in the relationship into the world. Many paths see them as two stages, as realization, actualization, sometimes called, or manifestation, how you manifest it. So that is, but it's true, sometimes, just like with Dilgu Khyentse, he has to be there in a cave for 9 years. So, I mean, he had to do his own personal work. He has to find out what is truth. I'm not going to go help people when I don't know who I am. I have to know what I am before I can be of use. No.
And it's beautiful, like, in other words, like I will put it, but it's very resonant with what you're saying, is like when we do our own healing work, we create inner generosity. And so I often say, like when we do enough inner work, or what you call that we know ourselves, then it starts to become overflowing. And that there's either it flows back into the generations and our ancestors and creates ancestral healing, or it flows into the societal body. And it starts to have effects around us, in the social environment around us first, and then if it's our destiny, then it's gonna expand beyond that. And I also think in this question there is the, like, sometimes the misunderstanding of spirituality is that, or some people can use spirituality as a bypass to the challenges in their life, and also to a bypass to the challenges that we have in this world, and that the fact that our climate is changing and that certain things are not sustainable the way they are, or there's a strong polarization, or there's racism in our world, and there's in a post-colonized world, or a post-Holocaust world, these are all very strong bodies of pain in our society, and they create constant re-traumatizations. And I think if we as people that are privileged enough to have access to the deeper resource within ourselves and within our environment, I believe the service, which I think we're serving life, that, because often my enlightenment can still just be about me. But my enlightenment becomes about the divine when I give myself to the divine and I receive the blessing of a realization. And I also, when I receive a blessing and I know where to receive and where to give, things come into an inner order. And so I think the natural consequence of an inner healing or inner integration or transcendence, for many people, except for some people, it's them kind of renouncing and living like a path in solitude, and that's their inner calling, so they will do it. And I think for many people, it's also serving our world and being in this world with all its challenges, and meeting it, and that my spiritual practice gives me even more resource to meet the world as it is. It's lovely what you said, Amit, before. It's like one practice is to be with what is, and not to be with how it could be, so but to be with how it is. And I think our spiritual practice can be a very strong resource to enable us and empower us to that the realization will spread beyond us. So that's,
you know, Thomas, you talk about receiving a blessing, and the way I was seeing it as you're talking is that you are a blessing. Your presence is a blessing. Your work is a blessing. Blessing is what helps, what transforms.
Yeah, thank you. So it's yours, Hamid. It's beautiful what you're saying. It's what works. It's beautiful.
Yeah. I feel it.
Thank you, Bob. I think we all feel the blessings by your beautiful hearts and wisdom. And this is such a rich conversation. I wish we had more time to go deeper.
I mean, we don't have another hour and a half. We could keep going.
Maybe a weekend. Maybe we do an event, a gather, the two of you.
I could see how this could keep going.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I think a week.
Let's commit to it.
I was also thinking about the weekend. Maybe, Hamid, we can speak afterwards.
Yes. Maybe. Although Maurizio wants us to come to Italy, do it.
Yes, Italy and a weekend. Okay, let's talk after. So,
maybe, Hamid, would you feel like guiding us with a little meditation to come?
Okay, that will take us a little longer. I'm happy to do that.
No, that would be beautiful if you can. Sure. I mean, that's
we can, you know. Thomas brought us into our body through sensing it and feeling it and being with it, with our inner experience. So if we start with that, sensing our body, the sensations everywhere, and we, as we sense our body, we recognize we have an interiority. We have a sensitive subjectivity. There's an awareness that is aware of the sensations and the feelings and the thought. All of it is, there is a field, actually, of sensitivity. And if we feel it in the heart, we might feel open, more closed, might feel pain, might feel pleasure. But one way is that this inner field, which we call subjectivity, is really not just a self being aware of something. No, it's a whole field. If you really feel it, don't think about it. It's everywhere in you, or maybe even beyond you. And it is a field of subjectivity, which is a field of sensitivity. And that field of sensitivity, if you feel it in the heart, and if you think of somebody you really like, you really love, if you bring the image of somebody you really love, you really like, and see what you feel when you say, I like, what is the feeling of like? The feeling, I love you. What is the love that you feel? The feeling of liking that you have. It's a certain feeling in the heart, a certain almost emotion, but it's more feeling, more affect of appreciativeness and liking, that has a happy feel to it. When you like somebody, you're happy that you're liking them. And so this happy liking can pervade the inner subjectivity and can feel as a kind of softness or fullness and a softness and a sweetness and a pleasure. Because when I like somebody, I'm happy to see them. I feel pleasure in their presence and their sight. And if you, so let yourself feel that and let it recognize that it is not just a response. It is an arising in our consciousness, by our consciousness transforming into this liking kind of medium, like the field of subjectivity is transforming into something sweet, pleasurable, and soft, soft the way rose petals are. So our heart can be full of pink rose petals, soft, delicate, caressing, but they have a feeling to them. The feeling is pleasurable, appreciativeness, liking. That is more of the specific presence, recognition of love, true essence of the heart. And we can feel it. At Sarmadija, we could do it any time. We could feel it in the heart, but the love, the liking, and the petal, the pinkish kind of softness, which has a luminosity, can spread not just through heart, but through the belly, the whole system, even in the head. Sometimes I feel I love from my head. Love comes through the head, comes through the feet, everywhere. It fills the whole subjectivity. Can become a subjectivity, can become a loving one. And if you feel it fully, you actually can smell the roses. And the heart is beautiful. Beautiful, the most beautiful, luminous pink. So I leave you with that. You either feel it now or as a possibility that can happen. You can know the heart this way. And then as you open your eyes now, sensing your body and feeling the softness, this pleasurable delicacy, can rejoin the whole field.
Thank you for this delicious taste of the heart. And
yeah. Yeah, I'm like, yeah, no, okay. Yum.
Okay. What, how does that translate to gelato? What kind of flavor of gelato?
I want an a rose, no, rose ice cream, petals. Rose petal, yeah, ice
cream. Okay, got it.
Yeah, you must know that Amid loves gelato. It's a secret.
Yeah. But and rose petal gelato.
Rose petal gelato.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Bob, for this rich conversation.